you. I didn't realize to the extent to which MSB is sort of a backdrop to this, so I need to disclose a potential conflict, and I don't think it's a problem for me to continue to listen to this, but I should at least voice it for council and for the board.
All right.
My firm used to represent MSB in the discussions between MSB and the county prior to the termination of the agreement, and there is actually litigation between the county and MSB. Now, my firm is not handling the litigation. So I see this as just a straight permit issue that really MSB is just backdrop to some of the reasons, but I don't feel like I have a conflict in deliberating and voting on this, but I at least thought to give the county and district council an opportunity to excuse me. We have a quorum, and so, you know, not the worst thing in the world for me to not be able to participate, but I don't feel that it's a problem, but somebody other than me ought to make that choice.
Council.
If I can ask a question, Mr. Saperstein.
Sure.
Have you advised or participated in the in your firm's work with Mustang?
Not at all. And other lawyers in my firm, and it's part of the reason why I was slow to even recognize it. I didn't realize MSB was Mustang and until listening to the presentation.
You muted yourself.
I think in that regard, since the wall was established between your client or your colleague's work on the Mustang matter and your uninvolvement, that conflict isn't necessarily present here, and that your continued participation is allowable.
I don't know whether the county should have other members of the county, if we're all the county, should have a voice to it. I'm perfectly fine staying or going.
I think with council saying that he doesn't see a conflict, it's then up to you, because you can recuse yourself at any moment if you feel that even if you don't have a real conflict, if you have a apparent one, you just want to be careful. So I think that the decision is up to you at this point.
Whether appropriate or not, the county representatives, do you care? County representatives.
Yeah, I think we can continue.
I didn't hear you.
I believe we can continue.
Okay. I'm fine. Thank you. I'll stay.
All right. Thank you very much for bringing that up. It's very important, that kind of clarity. All right, go on.
Okay, so perfect timing, because I will now hand it over to John Hancock to present the six findings.
Finding number one, without variance coverage, the county would be in violation of the same rules and conditions as those stated in the initial interim variance granted on May 31st, 2024. This includes District Rules 328C2, C4, G, and I1, District Rule 206, ATC 14500 Mod 10, and the following conditions listed on the screen. Finding number two, if the facility were to shut down, waste would be transported to the Chiquita Canyon Landfill in Los Angeles County at an approximate cost of $13.4 million per year. This increased cost would be unduly passed on to the end user. Additionally, the hauling distance and added truck trips would also result in a large increase in transportation-related greenhouse gases. When the county did assume operations of the facilities, it became evident to the county that MSB failed to fully communicate the state of the facility and the equipment. This resulted in the county unknowingly inheriting violations from MSB despite our efforts to oversee them. Therefore, these violations were beyond the reasonable control of the county. After the county assumed operations, we were fully able to assess the maintenance and repairs needed. The list of maintenance and repairs was extensive, and that is reflected in the violations. Much of the equipment and technology needed to complete these tasks is sourced from overseas and provided by contractors that were hesitant to continue work and left the project due to lack of payment by MSB. The county has worked hard to bring back these contractors and parts suppliers, but because their technical knowledge is critical in helping the county achieve compliance. Finding number three, Closing or taking the resource center would result in the landfilling of organics and fill up the Tahigas landfill before March 2026. If the landfill were to reach capacity, waste would be sent to Chiquita Canyon Landfill, and again, would be a significant increase in hauling distance and an increase in transportation-related greenhouse gases. If the county were to landfill the organic waste rather than routing it to the ADF, there would be an increase in methane surface emissions and noncompliance with Senate Bill 1383, the Organic Waste Division Requirements of CalRecycle. From a greenhouse gas perspective, the combustion of methane-rich biogas in the ADF engines is more environmentally friendly than burying organic waste in the landfill. Finding number four, reducing operation of the MRF and ADF engines would halt several beneficial aspects. At the ADF, it is critical to use residual heat from the engines in order to maintain a temperature that sustains the microorganisms that are responsible for the breakdown of waste within the anaerobic digester. By keeping the ADFs at full operation, staff are better able to track improvements in biogas production while adjustments are made to the system. At the MRF, the engine's residual heat is also used for condensate evaporation and recycled paper drying. Both the MRF and ADF engines generate electricity for use on-site and export to the grid, offsetting greenhouse gases that are generated by using other fossil fuel sources for electrical generation. Finding number five, by operating the MRF and ADF engines to their best extent and maximizing the benefits described in finding four, the county has been allowed to control excess emissions to the maximum extent feasible. More progress towards reducing excess emissions has been achieved by completion of SEMS work for the ADF and MRF engines. Parts for completing the maintenance and repairs to the SCR system have been procured, and work is scheduled to begin on July 22nd. Once maintenance and repairs have been completed, meeting other conditions listed, including BACT and source test requirements, will commence. Finding number six, all existing reporting and record-keeping requirements will be implemented as required by the permit for this variance. The county will monitor the volume of gas combusted in ADF and MRF engines daily. We will also conduct portable emissions analyzer monitoring on the engine stacks monthly. At this time, excess emissions are not known. Summary, the county is currently operating under Interim Variance Order 2024-05-I, granted on May 31st, 2024 by Chair Dressler. This variance provides relief from the conditions listed here. If granted, Variance Order 2024-06-R would allow relief for the aforementioned items through March 2125, or the date until maintenance and repairs are completed and compliance is achieved, whichever occurs first. Thank you for your consideration, and please let me know if you have any questions.
Before we get to questions, district staff.
I guess it's still morning. I was gonna say good afternoon. The district staff does support the variance request. I can attest that since I do the inspections out at this facility, I just was recently out there at the end of the month, and I was there, I believe, March of this year, and between those 3 months, there have been improvements at the facility during that time, and they have returned to compliance on another issue that was out there. So they are making improvements, is what I'm saying.
All right. One question.
Yes.
Have we received any odor complaints from the facility?
The district has not received odor complaints recently, no.
All right. And the reason I ask that is one of the findings we have to make is that this variance would not create a nuisance. And that particular finding was not addressed by the petitioner. So we can probably get to that when we talk to the petitioner and
sure.
Have questions for that.
The district has not received odor complaints.
Thank you. So I'm gonna open this up to questions from the board to either the district or the petitioner.
I've got just a couple.
Okay.
Is any of this related to the fire? We saw 2 years ago maybe, variance request from Mustang over fire-related impacts. Is the slowness part of that?
Thank you, Member Saperstein, via the chair. Actually, no, that was a separate issue, and we're pleased to say we have been able to, the county rectify that and have the baghouse filtration system up and running at the MRF.
Right. And maybe it's just because we meet so infrequently that this feels new each time. The part of the findings is we have to determine that the petitioner, the problem they find themselves in is sort of not under their control in some fashion. And I wonder whether some of the larger pollution hearing boards have a way of dealing with it, because this circumstance has a little bit of a flavor of the offshore platforms. A prior operator owner walked away from their responsibility, and now the real holder of the facility says, well, I didn't cause it, it's not under my control. That seems to me a really easy way for someone to step out of responsibility. And I'm not saying it's happening here. I wonder what some of the other bigger districts do with shuffling of entities, controls, and things like that. It seems like it would be such an easy way to sort of dodge that finding. Just give the facility over to some new LLC and somebody new's problem.
That's a good question. And a question for, in fact, I asked this question of council before regarding the platform Houchen and Hogan issue about is there a loophole that you can escape responsibility by using third parties? And once you take responsibility, how long does the third party's failure to act as an excuse?
Yeah.
A legitimate excuse. And can the hearing board use that as an excuse? And I made notes of it myself when I read this item. And one of the things that I focus on is that if we can focus on the simple question of is it within your control to come into immediate compliance? And if there are physical barriers to that, that are separate from the administrative barriers of who owned what when, then I think we can make the findings. If the only reason that you can't, that you say it's out of your control, is that it was somebody else's fault, I'm not sure that we could make those findings.
It's the coupling of it was somebody else's fault and that led to physical impacts to the facility, and that's what the county's experiencing is. Whether intentionally hidden or not, there was neglect, same as the offshore platforms. There was neglect that went on for so long, it became physically, it is now physically impossible to be in compliance without making the fixes that are being suggested. That is part of the what could be nefarious activity.
And as a matter of fact, if it was Mustang sitting there.
Yes. Yeah,
we might have that very issue.
And they would say, oh, it was one of our subs, and they hid it from us. At some point,
At some point,
it doesn't flow downhill. It comes right back.
Exactly.
I
understand
your
concern.
It's more philosophical, maybe practical,
sure,
for us. Sure. And I've been in this uncomfortable, boy, how far do we let that go before it's a real problem?
And I appreciate that, and I think it's very important when we go through the findings that we make the findings, and possibly this draft document will have to be modified so that we can narrow in our findings about exactly how we are going to be able to make the findings that are necessary for us to make.
So the lawyer piece of this world, that has to have been litigated. What the nature of that test of when is it outside the petitioner's control, legitimately outside their control, I would think, and some of the other LA and some of the other bigger districts have had to have dealt with that beyond the hearing board in litigation. I don't know. Never researched it.
In my experience, the whole thing has been set up so that each of these cases is to use a term that lawyers like to use, sui generis. You know, it's unique, and that's why this board is set up as the adjudicatory body, rather than simply it's using a rule based process. Yep. Why the staff isn't making why the health and safety code set it up for an adjudicatory body like this to deal with it, rather than just having a rule-based process by which the staff gets out these things. So I don't know if it has been or not, where I'm sure hearing boards have failed to make findings. In fact, the hearing board for Santa Barbara County has before been unable to make findings. But each individual thing is unique, I think. Does council have any input into this that you'd like to share with us?
If you can just clarify the question a little bit.
Well, and we can avoid this, I think, by making sure that we're careful about our finding. But at some point, this was somebody else's fault may not be an adequate finding for this was out of my control. Do you agree with that?
I think it would come down to the facts of whether or not the county knew, how much they knew about the operators, you know, nefarious acts or negligence, et cetera. And to the extent that they knew, that might be a fact that goes against, you know, the county. So it's a matter, in my opinion, as to the knowledge of the county's, of how Mustang acted or didn't act.
So to sharpen my question, if we were going to use the fact that it was, quote, somebody else's fault, what we would have to drill into for the testimony is what did the county know about this, about their contractor, and when did they know it, in order to sort through that as a finding?
Yeah, and I think also what could it have done to address the issues at the forefront with the contractor?
Thank you.
I didn't intend to make this more complicated than it need be.
That's fine.
Is it reasonable for us to say it differently? It is one of our required findings. It's outside the petitioner's control to, in some fashion, that led to their requesting the variance. And so if the response is, we didn't control it, somebody else was responsible, and now we're left holding the responsibility, that's an odd obligation to put on a petitioner. And I'm not sure the county has yet explained to us. So I'd rather that not be the test. I'm not sure that the last two applicants provided sufficient information. It's that black box on the appeal that's over financial responsibility, and they don't know yet who really is responsible for the facility. So maybe we couldn't have made the findings we just made.
Perhaps to satisfy your need to make the findings, you can formulate a question for the applicant, for the petitioner, to make sure that they clarify to you, other than this is, quote, somebody else's fault, why being in compliance today is outside of their control. If you don't,
and so maybe somebody ought to stop us if we're sort of going far beyond.
I have some questions that maybe will help answer that.
What we have done in the past in responding to that is they're here now, whoever the petitioner is, they're here now having to do some work that takes some time. And the really the variance request is give us that time to do the work that's required, because we acknowledge we have to do these fixes before we can come into compliance. And if that the response to that question was reasonable, we're being diligent, we're buying all the equipment that's necessary, we have a time plan, a plan and a reasonable time estimate to get into compliance, that seems to be how we've responded to meeting that requirement.
Yes, it does seem how we have been doing it.
And so maybe maybe I should just stop, and it's okay. As simple as that, because they have presented that part of the world to us.
Why don't we go on with questions?
Yeah, so in this letter from County Public Works Compliance Manager, it talks about extend coverage is needed to receive materials associated with equipment maintenance, complete maintenance activities, conduct required tuning and calibration, and source testing. But I didn't see any type of schedule or list of equipment, things that the county is actually waiting on, that they've ordered or entered into contracts for, or anything like that. Can you comment?
Yes, thank you, Member Cook, through the chair. Great question. We would love to talk about the compliance schedule. So Mr. Hancock originally addressed the fact that the completion of the SEMS work has been completed for the ADF and the MRF. And so we, as soon as we became aware of the issues, have been working diligently. However, some of the materials are procured from overseas, and that is a part of the delay that we've experienced. Mr. Hancock also mentioned that parts for completing the maintenance to the SCR are scheduled for July 22nd, and I believe that's, has it been moved up? Maybe you can.
Yeah, we've moved up the construction start date to the 15th. Once that construction is completed, that will take care of the SCR violations, SCR-related violations, and then when the SEMS and SCR are operational, BACT will fall into place, as well as source compliance testing.
So we estimate that even though the variance would go, I think, to March of 2025, compliance would be obtained well before the end of that variance date.
And then I had another question. So I'm trying to remember where. The question was, so what would be the ramifications of operating the engines without the emission controls?
Without the emissions control, it's more about tracking data than it is engine performance. Engine performance is controlled by its own, we'll say, operating software. Lean burn and stuff like that is controlled within that operating software. The SEMS is measuring exhaust gases, and you can pull that back into your engine's operation and even your feed gas. But really, the engines are operating, I won't say optimally, because there is no SEMS. I wouldn't say optimally unless that was in place, but they are operating.
So you do something. So you would do something like change the temperature of the engine based off of like feedback emissions being measured?
There's a very small amount of adjustments that you can make. It's a very controlled engine. So we take advantage of everything we can, but still operates within a small range of adjustability.
So let me see if I can offer some clarification. The engines have a permit, and the permit has very specific operational ranges of what they are allowed to operate. Right now they are operating within the temperature range and the flow of gas that they're allowed to operate on. They're within those parameters, and they have not request coverage on that. The emission controls are the SCR bricks and the oxidation catalyst system, along with the urea. Is that what you're asking?
Yes, so I think that makes more sense okay. Now. So essentially, you're not able to control the emissions, even if you were running the engines, and that's where your violation would be coming
Correct, because they are operating it without those emission controls, thereby exceeding their emission parameters specified in their permit, potentially.
There's other questions, go ahead. I'm trying to find this appendix C and D.
I'll just make a comment. I recall from earlier presentations that this resource recovery and waste management facility is definitely state of the art. The approach is fairly unique. How many other waste management facilities are there, anything like this across the US?
Thank you, Dr. Colomay. To our knowledge, none. This technology comes from Germany.
Yeah, I mean that's my sense that you're dealing with a pretty unique situation, and so all of your adjustments here are you have to handle it as a one-off, really.
Well, while he's looking for his other, I remember too that so how are other communities complying with the new state laws? It's separation at the generation site, and is the county learning that that's maybe a better way than this unique facility?
Thank you for the question, Member Sepasine, through the chair. Yes, you're correct. Other communities are doing it differently. Some of them are doing source-separated organics at the curbside. We have found that even the best and most sophisticated communities are still not hitting the goals of diversion of 75% of organics from the landfill.
And so, again, we're far afield. I'm trying to give Mr. Cook time to find his other questions. What are the lessons learned? Is it worth other communities adopt so this becomes a more prevalent way of doing business and you learn from one another? Seems pretty lonely to be the only facility in the country.
I think, thank you for that comment. I think it really depends on the community. Obviously, the County of Santa Barbara's waste and our characterization studies differs from what you would expect in other communities, in even the state in California. So it really depends on the waste characterization from those communities and also the resources available to those communities as well.
Not in there.
Is that the extent of your questions? Okay. Any further questions? All right. I will open public comment on this area.
On this, Chair Dressler, members of the hearing board, we did not receive any public comment on this item.
Anybody in the audience want to comment? Hearing none, I'll close public comment. So let's take this back. We already had quite a discussion. But let's see if we can make our way through the findings. I think that we can definitely make the finding that the petitioner is in violation. They've given that testimony that they are in violation. And now the tricky one, that due to conditions beyond their reasonable control, requiring compliance would be an arbitrary, unreasonable taking or practical closing. The beyond control reasonable control is the issue. I think that there's a lot of discussion about the relationship with MSB that's in the draft order. That's probably unnecessary. There should be probably at least a sentence in there that discusses that the contractor did not perform. And the district and the county took action to cancel contract. What else are they going to do? They couldn't force the contract in any other way. And now they've accepted responsibility.
And I do think we heard helpful testimony that when the county discovered it, they quickly and responsibly came up with a plan that did all the things necessary to get them on the road to compliance. And that testimony, I think we've heard.
So they've taken all the reasonable control that they could.
Yes.
But it didn't bring them into compliance. And now there's supply chain issues and time necessary and trying to entice contractors back and all of that stuff. So these things are going to take time. So I think that we can make the finding that it was beyond their reasonable control and that it's definitely beyond their reasonable control to come into immediate compliance.
And I guess the record's not going to show us shaking our heads in. So yes, we agree with that assessment of the testimony.
The closing or taking would be without a benefit reducing air contaminants, because it would simply transfer those air contaminants from this facility to other facility and plus add transportation related emissions. It's interesting how people always cite greenhouse gases nowadays because it's the thing, but there's a lot more than greenhouse gases in those transportation related emissions that would be going down through several air basins that really would not prefer to have them there, not only our own. And so there would not be a corresponding benefit if we told them to shut down the landfill until they got everything fixed. We heard that. I think we heard enough evidence of that. Petitioner evaluated shutting down the engines, but that would require alternative means for the hot water, and it would mess up the whole process. During the period of the variance effect, the petitioner will reduce emissions by operating the engines and maintain the microorganisms in the percolate tank. They gave evidence to support that. And the petitioner said that they will monitor the volume of the gas engines daily and conduct monthly portable emissions, an analyzer monitoring of the engine stacks. So that's what I heard as far as the testimony. Is there any dissent that we can make the findings?
No.
Okay. So apparently we can make the findings. I will entertain a motion.
I'll make the motion to grant the variance.
I'll second.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion granted. You have your variance. The next item is approval of the administrative agenda. Does anybody in the hearing board wish to pull any of these items?
No.
I'll open public comment on the administrative agenda.
We did not receive any public comment on the administrative agenda.
I'll close the public comment. Can I get a motion to approve the administrative agenda?
Move to approve the administrative agenda.
I'll second.
I have a motion and second on the administrative agenda. Is there any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Passes unanimously. I think we're at the end of our meeting.
I'd like to put in one comment for
staff, I guess. So I think several of these variances seem to be very schedule-driven by people, and I think adopting increments of progress or things like that in the variances would be helpful for us to examine.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good. Oh, you know what? We didn't have that discussion about advisory to the district regarding items E. Let's see here.
And Chair Dressler.
E1 and E2.
If I may, Chair Dressler, I would recommend that you not entertain any formal motions that were not agendized on those items. If you wanted to provide general direction to staff, I think that that would be appropriate at this time.
All right. So since we won't be doing motions, why don't we just go down the line and each one of you can give your general guidance.
Were you going to comment
on something? Yeah, I just had a comment on Mr. Cook's comment. The increments of progress were actually not included in the Tahiguas variance request because the health and safety code says anything under a year it's not required. But if you would like that to be included in future variance requests, that's definitely something that we can entertain. So yeah, if it's greater than a year, it's absolutely required. But because it was less than a year or right at a year, that's why it was not included.
Yeah, I just find that nothing keeps something on schedule like having a schedule. So, yeah.
All right.
Let me start?
Yeah.
So a few different minds to it, because I really don't want to sort of make work for staff that is just make work. I think you heard the level of frustration over the offshore oil facilities, and it just, among all the things that maybe are important to spend more time, more money on, they're an eyesore, they're going to go away in 2-3 decades, either by crumbling or because somebody finds enough money or has the financial responsibility to make them go away. And what I have trouble with is sort of from a real practical air quality impact, are they really that meaningful? I don't like to see them offshore because they're just an eyesore, but among all the other things, so shipping, the speed of offshore ocean liner and that kind of traffic, I don't know, relative to, maybe there's, I'm thinking as I'm talking, which is a dangerous thing. Maybe what would be helpful is give us some sense of what the district staff's priorities are from a real impact to the county. And what I've always understood is it is that offshore traffic that is primarily responsible for, to the extent Santa Barbara County is not in compliance for air quality emission standards, it's because of that. And if that's the case, let's talk about how we spend some time and political capital on that than the eyesore, if that's really not an issue. And I say that for sort of two different reasons. I think, Dr. Colomay, you're right, and it will be tremendously expensive. And so is that where we want our public money to be spent? Because ConocoPhillips and whoever else is not going to spend their money until they're forced to do it. And it's all public resources either spent in forcing them to do it or it's our local representatives decide it's more important to spend public dollars to take away something that is somebody else's responsibility. I don't like it. I don't like we're left in that position, but why spend our money and energy and resources if it's really not the primary air quality issue? All of that, all of what would take to get more effort and time spent on it is political capital. And that has its limits. So I'd rather whoever the right people are to have those discussions to have the priorities. And I just don't have a sense of is it really that much of a priority from an air quality impact? Don't know.
Dr. Collin?
I would agree with your comments. I also, Amy, I was glad to hear that the district is looking at its options. I'm not sure how much political capital would be required to get SALUD, to try and weigh in with Interior, and potentially have the district I think the resolution of financial responsibility is something that will unfold at some point. I mean, if the normal time period is 5 years, we're already 4 years into that. It would be very nice if we knew, in fact, what the likely ending date was going to be. And my own predilection would be after having received so many benefits from the federal leases that the majors really ought to be the ones that have to cover this, and that we should, in terms of thinking of this as an eyesore, we should at least get well rigs up there and cap the wells. I think weighing whether that's the most important ROC emission that you face is really just another issue in priority setting with the district.
Mr. Cook?
Maybe come back to me.
All right. I think my recommendation is that we take whatever action we need to, whether it be political action or simply writing a letter from the district, from the APCO to the board that's taking care of this appeal, this appeals board. But I think it's a good idea to perhaps get Salute involved, Salute Carbajal involved, get our representative involved if we can. But even if he doesn't feel comfortable doing that, if we, I think a letter to them explaining how this is important to us and explaining that if it's only the agreement that keeps a rig from being put on this platform, that's not good enough. Another interesting aspect of this is that it appears that they're saying that the agreement itself prevents them even from putting the rig on the platform, regardless of who takes responsibility for the well remediation. And there's going to be, before you do well remediation, the whole process of putting the rig on, of purchasing the rig, installing the rig, is a long time process. And there needs to be some sort of consideration of, let's just make the well rig part of the process of the partial stay agreement. That, okay, maybe you haven't solved the problem as who's going to actually plug and abandon those wells, and who's responsible for that. But they're ultimately going to have to be plugged and abandoned anyway. And so you might as well put the rig on the platform and have the rig there until you work out these other issues, And at least that would tell us, as the adjudicatory body here, that something's being done. I mean, they're not using a piece of paper to say, oh, this is beyond my control. I can't put a well rig on there because I have this agreement, They're actually moving forward, So if we could, at least reach out and make statements like that, I think is important so that we understand all this is going to take time. I mean, Platform Holly is already plugged, and yet there it is, and it's going to be there for a long time. And at some point, it's going to be in a state where it doesn't have a district permit anymore, doesn't need one, because there's nothing, but it's still going to be there. And then we're not going to worry about it. Somebody else is. But it's been taking a long time, and they've been diligent. So this is all going to take long, and it's not right, I think, for the partial stay agreement to delay everything. It's going to take long enough. The physical requirements to do what needs to be done to take those platforms down is going to take long enough. The piece of paper shouldn't delay it. I think that needs to be the crux of our comments.
And Chair Dressler, since the board members' comments are geared towards the specific items of E1 and E2 and not general staff direction. I would recommend that you reopen those items and see if there's any additional public comment after you have.
Okay, I will do that. I will do that.
Thank you.
Earlier I looked up the report that Mr. Heston had referenced, and it was $1.6 billion for 23 platforms for decommissioning, so about average $70 million each.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That was fast.
Any further?
I do agree that making, you know, some type of decision here, you know, and even going to a contractor and saying, we're not going to grant this variance, you know, so you don't have this permit to operate, has them go back to their client, say, hey, we can't do this, you need to renegotiate your agreement, right? That I think that is a path that can follow from that type of decision. You know, so everybody has agency to negotiate, so, and so do we.
What in part you're kind of suggesting is that the County of Santa Barbara ought to be involved in that administrative process. And if it's not, it's worth the district and county council's office giving some thought to whether there's some utility in the county intervening in that administrative adjudicatory process. Because us sitting here, we don't know enough about the details of the agreement, what the implications to whatever the strategy might be to make sure that a private party rather than the federal government is paying, and it would be nice to be thoughtful about how that happens.
Okay. Further comments? I will open public comment on items E1 and E2.
Chair Dressler, members of the hearing board, we did not receive any additional public comments.
Hearing none, I will close public comment. Thank you. With that, is there any other business before this hearing board today? Then I will adjourn this meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
It was a long meeting.
Long meeting and engaging conversation.